When Jasmine Blooms, my latest novel, is out. Perfect for book clubs, When Jasmine Blooms is a contemporary take based on Abigail Alcott and Marmee of Little Women, a novel about Selene, a grieving life coach faced with an intervention who thinks what if and wakes up one morning in that reality. Grab it wherever books are sold or at tinyurl.com/When Jasmine Blooms. Welcome to the Stories to Love podcast, the podcast where I fangirl over creators and find out all about their inspiration in hopes to boost our own inspiration. I am your host, Tiff Marcello, an inspiration seeker and your resident fangirl. Hi, this is Tiff of the Stories to Love podcast, and this is episode 79. Here with me today is Evelyn Skye. Evelyn Skye is a New York Times bestselling author of books for adults, young adults, and children. Her highly anticipated forthcoming novels include Damsel, which will also be a Netflix film, starring Millie Bobby Brown, Robin Wright, and Angela Bassett, and The Hundred Loves of Juliet. Evelyn is a graduate of Stanford University and Harvard Law School. She lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with her husband and daughter. In this episode, we discussed her most recent release, The Hundred Loves of Juliet, and her vulnerable and candid discussion about its inspiration and finding herself in this novel. She talked about the soul of this Romeo and Juliet story and how it became a safe space. Finally, we touched on her transition from children's to adult stories. I want to thank all of you who have subscribed to this podcast. If you haven't, I'd love it if you click to follow so you can get notifications of every new episode. And if you have found this podcast helpful and fun, please leave a rating and review. It really does help to boost discoverability. You can even share this episode with a friend. For more information about me, Tiff, and submitting to this podcast, please head on to my website at tiffmarcello.com. And here we go to my In Conversation with Evelyn Skye. This is Tiff of the Stories to Love podcast, and here with me is Evelyn Skye. Hi, Evelyn.
Hi, Tiff. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh my gosh. We have Evelyn Skye here, and she is the amazing young adult author of The Crown's Game. And now she has written The Hundred Loves of Juliet, and it is beautiful. And I just wanted to say thank you to her publicist for sending me her book. And Evelyn, thank you so much for coming. I would love for you to tell us what this book is about.
Absolutely. Thank you again for having me. So The Hundred Loves of Juliet is my adult fiction debut, and it is a reimagining of Romeo and Juliet. And basically the question is, what if Shakespeare got it wrong? And Romeo never died, but Juliet did, and she's been reincarnated over and over. And in every lifetime, he finds her and they fall in love, but then he has to watch her die again. And then now in modern day, she refuses to believe in their tragedy. And so can they break their cycle?
Wow. I mean, when I saw the description come through my inbox, I was like, please give it to me now. I mean, what a great concept about this love story that we have pined over for years and generations, right? This tragedy that Shakespeare wrote, and we have lamented on the ending. And now we have this ability to be able to reread it, you know, in this way. So can you share what this, where the kernel of this book came from?
Yeah, it's kind of like you said, Tiff, we're like, the story, people love Romeo and Juliet, but the part that's always confused me is that it's actually so sad. Yeah. And I think, yes, that's part of it. People like bittersweet romance, but also I think what actually gets people is the intensity of their love. And so when I came up with the idea with an opportunity to maybe reshape this story and possibly give them more hope,
yeah,
I was very excited about it. But I came up with this idea years ago, and it was just the Romeo and Juliet kind of reincarnation plotline. And something about the story felt like it was missing. So I set the idea aside for many years. And then, as I'm sure you will bring up later, My husband got sick and he was diagnosed with an incurable genetic disease. And it wasn't until that happened and we were both facing the possibility of his death that the soul of this story came to me and I understood what it would be like if Romeo kept losing Juliet and then kept having her back, you know, that opportunity to have a loved one come back into your life, but then his fear that he would lose her again. And then from Juliet's point of view, you know, what happens if you know that your time is short?
Yeah. This the soul of this book is it. First of all, thank you for sharing it. And I know that that is difficult and that was difficult and continues to be difficult because you will, for those folks out there, when you pick up the finished copy, it will have an author's note in which Evelyn has revealed some of this history with her husband, and to be able to share that is a huge thing. And also to be able to work through that through story is also another thing. It's, story becomes really such a vehicle sometimes, right? For folks to manage their emotions. Me as a reader, like I will read a story and sometimes can find ways to manage my own emotion through that book. It feels really safe. Is that how you felt when it was time to think about what this book could be?
Absolutely. I think that is such an accurate representation. This book was almost like self-therapy for me to work through my emotions. And it is such a safe space because I can give all of my feelings to my characters and then let those characters play them out to some kind of logical or illogical end. So there's so much of me in both Sebastian and Helene. Sebastian, because he is Romeo, who has actually never died, and he's watched Juliet die over and over again, he understands what it is to love someone when you know that the clock is ticking. And so all of his fears, all of his anticipatory grief, that is me. And there are so many moments in this book where if Sebastian will be with Helene and then they'll have a happy moment, but then he'll pause and his mind will go to, oh gosh, but I'm not going to have this forever. And then she says, hey, be here with me. And those are actual real things that have happened with me and my husband, where, you know, we'll have a tender moment and then I'll suddenly start crying because I'll think, oh my gosh, this is not my future forever, you know, and he'll remind me, but I'm still here, right? Like he literally will say, I am still here. But on the flip side, Helene, she is such an optimist and she is the one who is going through this cycle over and over as Juliet. And I am also an incredible, like unstoppable optimist, which is almost, it seems impossible that I could be both Sebastian and Helene, but I am. And that's actually how I got through my husband's diagnosis. And to finish that story, he was diagnosed with an incurable lung disease due to a genetic mutation, which we found out only three other people in the world have ever been
Oh my
documented as having.
gosh. Oh my
And they
gosh.
are in the same family. So, yeah,
Wow.
right? So it's just absolute madness. But basically, his lungs were turning into scar tissue. It's almost like imagine that his lungs were turning into stone and they no longer worked. So he was on life support in the hospital and he was literally days away, probably from dying, his doctor said. And then he got a double lung
My
transplant. Like we
gosh.
found an organ match. It was such a relief. And for us, literally a second chance at life for him,
Yeah.
right? So, like for me, that is his reincarnation and it's our second chance to get to have our love story continue. And so for me to get through all that, I also had to have this force of optimism in me that it's going to be okay, you know, and no matter what, whether or not he survived or not, that I was going to be strong and that I would be okay. And so I gave that to Helene. And I think that even though the undertone of this book is a lot of Sebastian's grief and that tragedy from the original Romeo and Juliet, overall, it is such a hopeful story, and I think that that is the message that readers take away from this, that yes, it might make you cry, but that it's also going to make you smile and make you feel so good and really believe in true love and the goodness of life and living in the present.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely read that, and there's so many parts to this whole novel, right? You have the present time when all of these things are, when Helene and Sebastian like meet, and it's like this blow up of minds between, with Sebastian, like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, it's her, right? That is what he feels. But then there are also these moments, you know, moments in time and moments in their history that you were able to slip in there that kind of build that backstory of their love. So I'm not sure what to say about it, so I'll have you say on it. But how was it writing those stories? I mean, just because they span the length of time, right? They span the length of a lot of time, not just like 10 years ago, but generations, centuries even. So how did you come up with building that love story in the past?
So in The 100 Loves of Juliet, I go through centuries of past lives of Romeo and Juliet. So we start with the originals. We see that moment again that we are also familiar with in Shakespeare, where Romeo first sees Juliet at the Capulet's manor at the party. And from there, I kept a timeline across centuries of different Romeo and Juliets, because Romeo, he's actually the same guy throughout, but he takes on different identities. And so I write from chapter one all the way to the end. I'm a chronological writer. I don't understand writers who can jump from chapter one to chapter 27 to chapter three. Like, I can't keep it straight. So as I was writing the present day story timeline, I would feel like, okay, this is a good time for us to have a flashback to a past life. Okay. And so I was creating those, their history as I was writing the present day story. And in that way, we could also make sure that what was happening in the present day story was tied to whatever flashback that we are seeing, so that it didn't feel random. So if Sebastian, who in modern day, or Romeo is Sebastian in modern day, and he is a king crab fisherman in Alaska. So if he's at sea and it's stormy, the flashback will be to him at Pearl Harbor when he's a lieutenant and the attack happens. So that was how those flashbacks developed. But also, Helene is a budding novelist. And so her backstory is that all her life, she's written little vignettes that are love stories about these characters that she imagined. And now she's trying to write a novel, and she's convinced that somehow these short stories come together, but she doesn't know how, but there must be a through line. And for her, what it is there's these little bits of, you know, like the Pearl Harbor story that Sebastian is thinking about. We see her version of it, but it's different. And so it reflects their personalities as well. And I think for the reader, it's kind of a fun exercise to put them together and see how different people approach life, how you see your experiences through different lenses. And two people can be in the same place the same day and walk away with completely different lessons.
You know, what I loved about that is that it was so hopeful, right? Those little vignettes really threw in that hopeful line, that hopeful arc, because the present day, right, was telling us a story that perhaps fate might strike again. And the other stories were just the thing that told us that everything was going to be okay. Do you know what I mean? It was just one of these things where I was like, oh my gosh, here we are again. And it was just so beautiful. I am just in shock that you just decided, okay, it's time for a flashback. Let me write a flashback at this specific time. That's a lot of historical stuff that you wrote, Evelyn. So like, you must be a history nerd, I'm assuming.
I'm kind of a history nerd. And as a writer, I read so much. And so I absorb scenes and feelings from different historical periods, because I also love reading historical fiction. So I think that that's how a lot of it happened. And I did have to do some research about some time periods. But, it, you know, for the most part, I let the story itself guide me and the love story between those versions of Romeo and Juliet at the time. And then if I had to go back and revise and be like, okay, what were village conditions actually like in Transylvania at this time? You know, I can put those in later. But mostly I was just kind of going by gut feeling and also keeping this timeline, right, of like the different centuries. So I knew I had to hop through different centuries. And I didn't want to do like too much in the 14th century. Okay, so now we're going to go to the 18th and we'll jump back to the 16th just to make sure we're kind of everywhere and see the vast expanse of Romeo and Juliet's centuries long love story.
Yeah, I'm going to go on to a quote that I picked out, and it's on page 15 in the arc. It's going to be different for folks that have your finished copies, but quote, "What Shakespeare didn't realize was that the tragic tale of star-crossed lovers was more than one boy and one girl. He envisioned only a small sliver of history and not the span of all time. Close quote. So to me, that is just the epitome of what we do as writers, right? We write a span of time. And I thought that was so cool that you wrote that there to give us this reinforcement that also this book that seems to span their whole lifetime hasn't actually ended either. You know what I mean? So it's so cool because you're like, okay, even at the end, there's still more. You know, did you mean to do that? Because it was almost like the carrot. You know, I kept that carrot in front of me reading the whole book because I was like, oh, yeah, there's going to be more.
Absolutely. And I think part of it stems from just my love for epic love stories. And then the other part is this belief that, like, in our real lives, even when we depart our physical bodies, that our souls, if they're destined for each other, they will find each other again. And so it is not just about this one moment of time when we happen to be, you know, human on earth. Like, I truly believe that my soul will find my husband's again in eternity. Mm-hmm. So that's part of that. I don't know. It's just this big, long, epic love story. And it's so hopeful. Again, I am an inveterate optimist. You can't stop me. Yeah. Even in the face of my husband's sickness and the things that we face, it's just, I'm just so happy still, you know, in this moment and with him. And I wanted that for Romeo and Juliet.
For sure. Oh my gosh. Well, you are not a new person to epic stories. The Crown's Game was an epic story that, how many books was that? Was that four?
No, it was only two, actually. I think you're probably thinking of my second series because they came back to back.
Oh my gosh.
So it was two and two.
Okay. Yeah. So I just.
But it felt big because it was such a momentous time in history.
Yeah. It was, and I felt like it was just like this continuation of like that heart expanding kind of story. So you were a young adult author, and you also wrote children's. I know that you have two middle grade, or is that younger?
Where there was, I have one middle grade that's out, and then the other one is in that same series. It comes out next year, but I am personally done writing it. I'm just okay. We're doing proofreading at this point.
Yeah. So you have YA, you've got middle grade, and now you have this adult book. How was that transition from being in that epic YA space to now adult contemporary with magic in itself? So how is that for you? How was that transition?
It was really interesting. And part of what happened to me, Tiff, is that I was writing YA fantasy for years, and I got tired of complicated magic systems. And I yearned to write something a little bit simpler. And so last year, a couple friends and I came out with a book that we wrote together, Three Kisses, One Midnight. It is YA, but that was sort of it was like a palate cleanser / transition, you know, like that moment in a meal when things are about to change. And that was contemporary with just a hint of magic, because it's about three friends at Halloween who come across a love potion that may or may not work, but really probably doesn't work, right? So it's just that hint of magic. And so that's where I wanted to go with my writing. I'm not saying I'll never return to true fantasy, but sometimes you just get a little tired. But also I think just my life experience with my husband's illness really kind of shoved me forward into this full, serious adult way of thinking about our relationship and just about relationships in general, that I felt like needed to be in an adult book. Because in YA, everything is an experience for the first time. And so you can't have the long view of a relationship where you've had so many losses and, like, you know, you make up, you break up, etc. So that was what ushered me into adult fiction. And I like it here. I think this That's feels awesome. Really good.
Yay! Well, you know, I wanted to ask, you know, my last book was A Little Women Reimagining. And writing into that space, I really did feel that pressure. Did you feel that pressure at all in writing this Romeo and Juliet reimagining?
Only a little bit, in that I think that, number one, I say that Shakespeare got it wrong.
Yeah.
And that allows me a lot more freedom. And actually, a lot of people don't know this, but Romeo and Juliet was not Shakespeare's original idea. The story already existed and had been told by other authors, and then he took it and repackaged it his way. So really, who knows what the true story is, if it's even true, right? Or what the original version is. The other thing is, I like to think of this as Romeo and Juliet is the origin story versus it being a retelling or a reimagining, because really we're just starting out with an original Romeo and Juliet, but no one's ever told the story like this, where they exist for centuries, and go
Where we
through these
pick up
different
where, yeah,
lives.
when you pick up where you left off, because I love that, by the way, because my biggest question was, how are you going to launch this? Like, when did this happen? Right? Knowing
Yes.
I've read Romeo and Juliet, right? I watched all the movies, whatever else, right? I'm like, okay, where is this? And sure enough, you were able to nail down the moment, right, that things changed, right?
And that was actually, the trickiest chapter for me to write was taking that original scene from Shakespeare in the Capulet morgue, the mausoleum, and tweaking it so that it was the language was not as Shakespearean, but also so that the story was an, homage to Shakespeare, but also could fit into this modern day story, right? And could be that jumping off point. And so I had to make those decisions, like here are the little changes. The earlier version started in the apothecary shop and was much more involved. And in the end, my editor and I decided to cut that and just go straight to the mausoleum. So that was probably the part that I had to wrangle with Shakespeare the most.
I felt like you nailed it, 'cause I was just looking for that.
Thank you.
I was looking for that moment. Like, when did this happen? So it was just so cool. And I want to say that this is actually not a huge book for all the stories that are in here. I mean, the ARC is 315 pages. I don't know what it is in the hardback, but
I think the official number is 336,
I
but I
mean,
don't know if that includes the filler pages. Sometimes they don't count the numbers, or the book starts on page 10 for some reason.
yeah, that's pretty awesome. I think that, I am a writer of long books. Like, I think it's because I just talk too much, but yeah, that's 306, 330 pages is really not super duper hefty for all those stories that are in there. So I just thought that that was so cool, how there's just so much in there. I do want to ask though, so the stories, you don't have to tell us what's coming up necessarily, but the stories that are coming through you now, are they in the adult space then?
Yes, absolutely. So I just finished my third draft and probably the close to final draft of my book that's coming out next year, which no one knows what it is about yet, but it's definitely still, it's adult. It's in the same vein of being contemporary with just a hint of magic. And I'm really in love with it, which I feel like is kind of strange to say about your own work. I feel a little bit weird saying, oh my God, you guys, this is so good. But I'm very excited for it. So definitely still adult. And then I'm about to take a short sabbatical from writing because I've been working almost nonstop for 2 years. Like after my husband got his transplant and he's doing well, the creative floodgates just opened and all these books came out in the last, I think in 335 days, I had four books that are being published. This is the last of the four. So it's been a bit mad in a great way, but I'm going to take a break and walk away and just like experience life because I don't think that you can be a good writer without refilling that creative well. And it's little things, just like having chats with your friends or listening to your family's old stories or going on walks and listening to podcasts. I get ideas from the most random places, but I also know that it will not be a long break because the other day I was on a walk and I was listening to a science podcast of all things, and the podcaster said one word and I was like, oh my gosh. And the rest of the podcast, I was only half listening to the podcast and half plotting my next book. So it's coming, Tiff. Maybe like a 1 month break.
Do you have the ideas in your notes app? What do you use? I mean, when you get an
I
idea like that,
do.
do you just start typing in your notes app?
It's all my notes app, and I can't even tell you how many different ghosts of book ideas I have in my
I
notes
love
app because I just, you get these ideas and some of them are half baked and most of them are half baked or only like a third baked and they just stay that way. But occasionally something will break through and you'll get that aha moment.
Oh my gosh, I love that. So since we're talking about podcasts and books, I'm going to roll it up. So tell me, you know, give us a couple of podcasts, a couple of books that you're loving right now, and then I can listen to them too, because I love listening to podcasts.
Okay, so I'd listen to Rethinking with Adam Grant, which is, he's a behavioral psychologist, and he talks about the most interesting things that are completely unrelated to writing. And literally all of my hobbies are just, I write and I read books and then I write more books. And so this is often my one thing that is not within our industry. So I love Rethinking with Adam Grant. Otherwise, no one wants to listen to my podcasts, because they're all for studying Spanish language. Like, I listen to the news in Spanish. I listen to a science podcast, like Pop Science in Spanish.
Yeah, I love it.
My favorite books recently that I've read. So sometimes you want to read books that you can just finish in a day, but then sometimes you want books you can savor. And that's the mood I've been lately, is just these books that I can sit in the prose for a while and just enjoy the language, but not rush through. If you rush through it, you're wasting it. And sometimes you start thinking, oh God, it's too much. So you have to pace yourself. Okay, so the first book recommendation is No Two Persons by Erica Baumeister. She's the author of The Scent Keeper, which I always want to call The Scent Keeper's Daughter for some reason. But
it's like The Beekeeper's Daughter. Is there a book?
Yeah, I think Fire so. Firekeeper's Daughter?
There might
there,
be
there
that.
There are many daughters out there and many keepers. So No Two Persons is about an author who writes a novel. It's her debut novel. And then it follows that novel's journey out into the world through different people and how that book affects them and comes to them at important times of their life. So it's almost like a bunch of short stories that are tied together because of this novel that the first character wrote. And so I loved it.
It's cool.
Like I said, a book to kind of like read slowly, but for all book lovers and writers everywhere. And then the other recommendation is The Last Tale of the Flower Bride by Roshni Chokshi. Mm-hmm. It came out earlier this year. It is like a dark fairy tale of a marriage. It's present day, but then you're also kind of in this magical realm. It's just every sentence that Roshni writes is gold, and it's dripping with honey at the same time. So you really, really need to savor it. You can't rush this book, but it's beautiful and underrated, and I think everyone should read it.
Yeah, that's definitely on my to-be-read list. I mean, yeah, her prose is, you cannot rush through. That's absolutely,
no.
I totally
Stunning.
Agree with that. Yeah. You know, you talked about the podcast and with that psychologist, and I listened to a psychology podcast also. It's called Hidden Brain. And it's so neat, because it really does bring in, like, you know, thought leaders and or just like the science of why we feel a certain way, like why perhaps we feel badly about aging when it could have been, you know, an idea that was given to us rather than us really enjoying our lives, you know, as we continue to age. And I was like, wow. And I think that as writers, we have to have a foot in psychology. Don't you believe?
I absolutely agree. And that's actually probably why I keep getting ideas from this podcast that I feel like is really random. But you're right. It's behavioral psychology. It's all about people.
Yeah.
And that's what our characters are really about, right? A great book has characters that you can identify with, or that, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, it's that person in real life. And it makes us think about our lives and how we operate on a day-to-day basis and rethink our philosophies.
Yeah. And it definitely keeps us empathetic, I think, and open-minded, because, you know, we cannot judge, I guess, our characters, right? We can't judge
Definitely.
Their decisions, what they do. We can't be parents to them, that's for sure. So can you tell us what is coming out for you? So you have The 100 Loves of Juliet. When this comes out, it's already out. But you said you have a middle grade coming out. Can you tell us what's coming up that's
sure.
already in the schedule?
Okay, so I'll go backwards a little bit, because Damsel was a collaboration that I did with Netflix, and that's associated with Millie Bobby Brown's movie, and
Fantastic.
The movie is not out yet. So Damsel, the book, is out, and you can read it before the movie comes out, but that's sort of both in my past, but also in my future, because once the movie comes out, then more people will start reading the book, which will be really exciting, and we'll do a paperback that's a movie tie-in, and
Fantastic.
Hopefully some hoopla, but that's sometime in the future. I don't know what's going on with, you know, the actors' strike
yeah.
and the Writers Guild strike.
Yeah.
So who
yeah.
knows these days? Princess Private Eye is my middle grade book.
How cute.
It is like Nancy Drew meets the Princess Diaries, a spunky, half Chinese orphan from New York finds out that she is actually the princess of a European nation. And so she gets flown there, has to learn how to be a princess. But also, when she shows up, there is a rumor that there's a curse that's associated with her return to the country. And so she needs to solve the mystery of why all these bad things are happening to the country. So it's super fun for any readers out there who have children who are 8 to 12 years old,
I
Princess
love it.
Private Eye. And then book two comes out in May of next year.
Okay, that's amazing. Oh my gosh. Okay, and my very last thing I ask all of our guests, you kind of touched on it already, but you've been published for so many years now. I actually had forgotten to mention earlier in the podcast that I had submitted my manuscript or my one page or whatever to you during Pitch Wars, and it was well before 2015, so it had to be like 2013, something like that. What keeps you on the path to remain creative in the ups and downs of life in general?
So I'm going to share some wisdom from another author friend of mine, Stacey Lee. And she said that if you are truly a writer, the writing will come back to you. And so no matter what pauses you have to take through life, eventually the writing will come back to you, or you will come back to the writing. You know, it's really kind of the same thing. And the other piece of advice that I give now whenever I'm on panels at book festivals to aspiring writers is that your career is so much longer than you think it is. I remember being a debut and thinking, oh my gosh, this is it. If I don't make it now, that's it. No one will ever know who I am. And my career's over because my book will flop and then publishers will see bad book sales and it's over. But that isn't true because I have now been through the ups and downs of a career. I've had books that were wild successes and other ones, which I think probably most people didn't know I ever wrote. And it's fine because you are a writer and you can write new things. You can write new stories, the same kind of stories, you know, if you wanted to stay for me in YA, or different kind of stories, like I decided to write middle grade and now adult. So I think that it's just believing in yourself, which is sometimes hard to do as a creative, but also having a community of friends who can support you and who can say to you, hey, it's okay right now if you're at a lull in your career or you need a break. Just be patient, and you know that talent and that creativity is within you, and it will come back again.
Oh, I love that. I mean, it's perfect advice alongside your book itself. You know, The 100 Loves of Juliet really shows that there is more to life than this caption in time, that there was more before and then there will be more after. So that's just
Yes.
perfect. Oh my gosh, Evelyn, thank you so much for hanging out with me today. I
This
really
was
super
so
appreciate it.
fun.
Oh my gosh. And thank you everyone out there for joining us here at the Stories Love podcast, and we'll see you again. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining me, Tiff Marcello, at the Stories to Love podcast. You can follow me through my newsletter at tiffmarcello.com and Instagram and Facebook page under Tiff Marcello and the Stories to Love podcast. You can support this podcast by leaving a rating, spreading the word, and picking up one of my books for you and a friend on my website at tiffmarcello.com. I'll see you again.